We need to make a little note on our book today as we're reading from Gina Lehrer's book, The Four Teresas. Chapter 4, which is our fourth and final Teresa, is titled Blessed Teresa of Calcutta. We need to make a note here that she was canonized in September of 2016 by Pope Francis. So now she is Saint Teresa of Calcutta, most commonly known as Mother Teresa. A couple of special guests are joining us today. We're excited to have Gabe Batu and Ryan Petrillo reading with us, and we're going to get right into it. Blessed Teresa of Calcutta on page 73.
Her life. Gonja Agnes Bojacu was born on August 26, 1910, in Skopje, a city in former Yugoslavia, to Albanian parents. She was the fifth child of Nicholas and Rosa, but only she, her sister Aga, and her brother Lazar survived beyond infancy. Nurtured by the love between Nicholas and Rosa, the young Bojacu family flourished. During the day, their devoted mother cared for the children while their father was at work. When evening approached, Rosa would rush about and prepare to greet Nicholas. No matter what had happened during the day, Rosa was always smiling when Nicholas returned home. Growing up in the midst of this joyful existence was a pleasure for Aga, Lazar, and Agnes. These days of bliss were numbered, however. Nicholas was a prominent businessman involved in local politics. His political activity may have been connected to his sudden death, which many suspected was due to poisoning. Agnes was only 7 years old. Rosa was now entirely responsible for her children, and while the home had always been a devout one, it now began to radiate even more clearly the light of the faith. The Bojacus were active in the parish church across the street from their home, Sacred Heart of Jesus. The widow and her children regularly participated in church meetings, religious services, and the choir. Agnes was a gifted soprano and the soloist for the choir. She was also an active member of the Daughters of Mary, and she faithfully attended her catechism classes. She relished every opportunity to learn about her favorite topics, the lives of the saints, and the work of missionaries. The faith of the family had extended beyond the walls of the church. When poor beggars came to the door of the Bojacu home, Rosa never allowed them to go away hungry. She explained to her three children that these people, poor though they were their brothers and sisters too. This Christian perspective made an impact on the youngsters who grew up serving the poor. Agnes would eventually make this her life's work.
Agnes had a special interest in missionary service. As a young girl, she eagerly absorbed any news of missionary activity. Whenever she heard of a new missionary endeavor, she would locate the mission site on a map of the world that hung in her house and record little notes next to it. She followed the reports of Christian men and women working in far-off places, hoping one day to join their company. When she was 12 years old, Agnes told her mother she wanted to be a missionary, but Rosa said she needed to wait until she was older. 6 years later, Agnes was ready to assert that her long-standing desire was more than a child's fancy. While offering prayers at an altar in honor of Mary, the patroness of Skopje, Agnes felt her vocation confirmed in her heart. She believed that Mary had interceded for her to help her know her vocation with certainty. Agnes's call to religious life and attraction to missionary service would soon lead her to her home in India. At 18 years of age, Agnes waved goodbye to her little family, whom she would never see again, and she stepped onto the train alone. Traveling through Yugoslavia, Austria, Switzerland, France, and England, she arrived safely at the mother house of the Sisters of Our Lady of Loreto in Dublin, Ireland. This was the missionary teaching order she had decided to join. Agnes studied English for 2 months before boarding a ship for India, which arrived there 37 days later. After spending 1 week in Calcutta, Agnes traveled to the novitiate house in Darjeeling, India. 2 years more, and Agnes took her religious name, Mary Teresa, after St. Therese of Lisieux, whom she referred to as the Little Teresa, in contrast to Teresa of Avila, the Big Teresa.
After making her temporary vows, Sister Teresa went to Calcutta for her first assignment. She moved to the pristine campus of St. Mary's High School, which served girls from wealthy Indian families. During her first years there, Sister Teresa taught history and geography. Later, she served as the director of studies. Sister Teresa was quite content at St. Mary's, where she would spend 17 years. She embraced her new home and culture to such an extent that she would later declare herself to be Indian by choice. She considered herself the happiest nun in the community, though her life there was one of routine responsibility. She prayed and taught, and then did it again the next day. The sisters who lived with her considered her to be ordinary, quiet, and shy. But on September 10th, 1946, something out of the ordinary took place in Sister Teresa's life. On this day, which she later referred to as Inspiration Day, she heard God speak to her while she was traveling by train to Darjeeling. She understood that God was asking her to start a new order of missionary sisters who would work among the poorest of the poor in India. But she did not know how she was to carry out this divine directive. "I knew where I belonged," she later said, "but I did not know how to get there."
This dramatic call within a call persisted. Teresa felt that God was asking her, "Wouldst thou not help?" This was not known on her own whim or idea. She firmly believed that Jesus was making this request, and she wanted to respond with generous love. In a letter to Archbishop Pierre dated January of 1947, Sister Teresa explained how she had heard God asking her to begin an order of Indian sisters to serve the poor, and she asked for the Archbishop's permission to do so. In spite of her desire to begin this work, however, she respectfully wrote, "At one word that your grace would say, I am ready never to consider again any of those strange thoughts which I have been coming continually." Thankfully, Archbishop Pierre did not tell her to abandon the idea, but it would be some time before she was able to carry out the call God had placed in her heart. Sister Teresa had no intention of giving up her religious vows, but she did need permission to leave her religious community. She planned to start an entirely new order, which required additional ecclesial sanction. After several years marked by letters and visits to obtain special permission from the Archbishop of Calcutta, the Mother General of the Loretto Nuns, and Holy Father Pope Pius XII, Sister Teresa had finally ready to say farewell to her convent home. On August 17th, 1948, Sister Teresa left behind the beautiful buildings and gardens of St. Mary's School, community of sisters and students who had become her friends, the comfort and stability and routine. She took off the religious habit she had worn for 20 years, donned with white sari, the poorest Indian woman, and walked out to the streets of Calcutta. Once again, she was beginning an unknown journey alone. In fact, Mother Teresa's letter later said that this was the most difficult thing she ever did in her life. It was more challenging even than leaving her family and her country to become a nun. And she did it for the love of God.
A new mission. After taking a course in nursing, Sister Teresa conducted classes for children, gathering them together in the open air. She taught the basics of personal hygiene and then gave lessons in the faith. At the beginning, this makeshift school was truly humble. Dirt and sticks had to suffice in place of paper and pencils. In spite of the scarcity of proper materials, however, the children came to love Sister Teresa, and the crowds grew each day. Soon, Sister Teresa was paying personal visits to the children's families. As she walked through the slums on these missions of charity, she witnessed extreme destitution. Those families who dwelt in ramshackle huts were the lucky ones. Many people were living on the streets or in the gutters. Most of these forgotten men and women were on the verge of death, laying miserably without so much as a sympathetic glance from another human being to bring them comfort. But Sister Teresa did not ignore them. Her attentiveness to people in the direst situations became the hallmark of her work. She recalled the moment when she first picked up a woman whom she saw in the street. "I could not have been a missionary of charity if I had passed by when I saw and smelt that woman who was eaten up by rats, her face, her legs. But I returned, picked her up, and took her to a hospital." It was not as simple as handing the woman over to the doctors, however. At first, the hospital would not admit the woman, but Sister Teresa refused to move on until they accepted the dying patient. Next, Sister Teresa approached the city authorities and asked for a place to bring the suffering people she was passing in the streets. They gave her an empty building in a Hindu temple, which she filled with patients within 24 hours. And so the Society of the Missionaries of Charity was born. In the next months, several young women came to join in Sister Teresa's work, all of them her former students from St. Mary's. They were eager to give themselves to God through this special mission. With their help, Sister Teresa soon set up her first school. Then came a home for the sick and the dying, Nirmal Hriday, home of the pure heart. The building immediately filled to capacity with suffering people for whom the sisters lovingly cared. It didn't take long for Sister Teresa to become known as Mother Teresa, or simply Mother.
The sisters did not have a convent at first. They simply lived in a rented apartment. Within 2 years, the Missionaries of Charity, with its 12 original members, had gained pontifical approval. Trusting entirely in God's providence to sustain their work, in only 3 years, they had built a mother house, established an orphanage, and set up a program to serve lepers throughout the city of Calcutta. 12 years later, they opened their first home outside of India. By 1971, the order ran 50 homes throughout the world, and many more were yet to come. Mother Teresa once told several sisters who were about to begin a new mission, "If there are poor people on the moon, we will go there." She went on to help found the Missionary Brothers of Charity and two contemplative branches, the Missionary Brothers and Sisters of the Word. She also worked to establish the co-workers, who support the Missionaries of Charity by offering prayers and resources for the work of the order. With such productivity, one might assume everything came easily to Mother Teresa. Not so. She dealt with opposition and resistance from political authorities, as well as the ongoing challenge of caring for the poor and sick without any regular income for her order. On a personal level, she also endured decades of intense spiritual darkness, as well as physical pain and trauma.
When she was 78, she suffered from heart problems, likely aggravated by exhaustion from her work. Her doctors installed a pacemaker, and Pope John Paul II asked her to take concern for her health. She took 6 months of rest. Within another year, she stepped down as Superior General of the Order, but 5 months later, she was reinstalled. Mother Teresa never fully recovered her health. She suffered 5 heart attacks before she finally rested in peace. She died on September 5th, 1997, at the Mother House in Calcutta, which had long since become her home. Several months before her death, she had appointed Sister Nirmala as the new head of the Missionaries of Charity. Under Sister Nirmala's prayerful leadership, the order continues to flourish.
The Media Missionary. The loving work of the Missionaries of Charity under the headship of Mother Teresa has drawn much acclaim and attention through the years, although this was never the goal of the order. Mother Teresa met with royalty, world leaders, and the Pope, not for personal glory, but to discuss ways to help the poor and to urge these influential people to use their power for the sake of justice. When she won prestigious awards such as the Nobel Peace Prize, the Templeton Award for Progress in Religion, and the John Paul XXIII Peace Prize, for example, she would only accept them on behalf of the poor. Mother Teresa did not want to be the focal point on prize giving day. She believed Christ was just using her as an instrument to unite the people who came to these award ceremonies. In accepting the Nobel Peace Prize, Mother Teresa, who declined a banquet and used the money budgeted for one to feed the poor, expressed her view of the importance of loving our neighbors. "We cannot say, I love God, but I do not love my neighbor. How can you love God who you don't see if you do not love the neighbor who you do see? The neighbor you know and live with every day." Mother Teresa was a celebrity in spite of herself. It would be a challenge to find someone who doesn't know her name or recognize her face. Her image hangs in classrooms, churches, and homes, books about our lives in the shelves of bookstores and libraries, documentaries about her work air on television. But Mother Teresa wasn't a fan of all the attention. She would occasionally tell interviewers that if she made it straight to heaven, it would be because of the journalists and photographers who made her go through purgatory before she died.
Although she disliked the publicity, it left a valuable legacy. Not only can we read multitudes of books on Mother Teresa's life and work and look up the texts of her many speeches and letters, but we also can hear her voice and see her face. This woman has inspired a change of heart in many people. One man was contemplating suicide when he passed a shop with televisions that were playing scenes of Mother Teresa's work in the home for the dying. For the first time in many years, he felt that God still loved the world. He knelt down, prayed, and turned his life back to God. He later wrote Mother Teresa and told her about the effect this scene had had on his life. In addition to offering such inspiration, Mother Teresa's public accessibility helps bring us into a deeper understanding of her interior life. Much of the information we have about her comes through interviews she had during the course of her life, as well as lectures she gave. We also gain insights from her letters, especially those she wrote to the missionaries of charity and to her spiritual director. The reports of people who worked with her or observed her consistently reveal her total devotion to the mission of loving her neighbors. Mother Teresa saw and loved many neighbors in horrifying conditions, but instead of focusing on the wounds and the maggots crawling on a dying man's body, she would focus on his grateful smile after he received a plate of rice. Mother Teresa's love for Jesus enabled her to show joy and grace in the midst of repulsive circumstances. This wrinkled woman, who embraced such ugly situations, was surprisingly attractive to the entire world. She captivated Christians and non-Christians alike. We revere her for her tireless work and admire her for her generosity. She is a favorite reference point for causes of social concern.
Yet Mother Teresa was much more than a humanitarian in a white sari. Because of her continual focus on Jesus, her service was not simply social work. She specifically warned of the danger of doing the work for the sake of the work, instead of for the love of Jesus. People were attracted to her not just because of a remarkable display of compassion. Mother Teresa was a magnet to humanity because she gives us a glimpse into the divine. She radiated the supernatural light of Christ that had begun to shine in her years before she entered the limelight. This tiny woman, with the courage of a giant, sacrificed her family, her country, and her comfortable religious life to follow God's call. She gave up everything for the love of Jesus and served her neighbors as a response to that same love. She lived a life of continual service for over 7 decades. Hers was a lifetime of selfless generosity, most of which she voluntarily spent in the midst of squalor and destitution, for the sake of loving her neighbors as God called her to do. Okay, so there are so many things about Mother Teresa that we could reflect on and talk about. One of the things that I have felt so captivated by with my study of Mother Teresa versus the other Teresas is the fact that she's a modern saint, right? So we can actually go on YouTube and watch really bad videos of her, like giving her Nobel Prize acceptance speech or giving commencement addresses at universities. We can see these documentaries with photographs of her. So my experience encountering her was different than the other saints because I felt so much more connected to this real person, right? Sometimes we think of, you know, St. Teresa of Avila as sort of an icon hanging on the wall who's, you know, radiating with a halo. Just when you encounter the work of Mother Teresa and the things she's done, I feel like she's so real. So that for me was very touching. Like as I watched and listened to lectures and heard her voice and saw her wrinkly face, I was brought to tears so many times just feeling an encounter with this holy person. So I've felt a connection to her in a special way. I'm just interested for you guys who are joining in the discussion, any personal experience with Mother Teresa in her life story, in work that you've done, people you've encountered, what's sort of your understanding or history with Mother Teresa, or if you don't have it, you know, that's fine to be honest about that too.
Yeah, that's a great thought, Gina. Like, I mean, she's so near to us because of how close she was in our time frame and in our life. I mean, and you can kind of still see the fruit of it and you can go experience it or meet people that have met her. So, you know, I had the privilege of going in 2014 to Calcutta. While we were there, we met like Jim Tui, who was her attorney stateside, and all sorts of, he was the president of Ave Maria at the time, and just a lot of great circles about her. And so you can really see the fruit of her work. I mean, and when you're there, I mean, your senses are totally enamored with poverty at the highest level. I mean, you have Jaguar dealerships next to people that have maggots burrowing under their skin without clothes, families. To see what one woman's yes to follow God radically. Like, you know, I kind of think that, you know, as men, there's kind of like two types of guys in general. Let's just say that there are, like, you have the guy that loves like a corporate structure and a process and like systems, and, you know, he can see his road up that way. And then you have the entrepreneur that loves the unknown and plunging into the deep, and like, we're just going to make something out of nothing. If for Mother Teresa, I feel like she's probably the more structured person when you enter religious life, yet she had a total life and abandon of that of an entrepreneur, and just made this beautiful machine. And it's interesting that, you know, you identified so well in your book, she didn't do the work for the sake of the work. She was obedient. She had tremendous trust in God, but that all born from a place of love of her creator. And that's what inspired her to do the risk, the big things, to pick up the homeless person that, you know, was clearly dead, to try and bring hope and life in a place that there was none. Mm-hmm. So I think as men, it's important for us to realize, like, hey, it's not about what we can do, but rather let's try to love our God first, and flowing from that, our work is going to come again.
That's amazing. What an awesome experience to be able to be in that place where she worked and to encounter people who encountered her and to have some insight through your own flesh and service of what that actually meant, what she actually took upon herself, that contrast. Wow. The Jaguar dealership next to the people in the streets. It's such a tragedy. It's such a sad thing. Wow.
And just that, what you're saying between the, you know, the kind of the structured life, maybe how safe it was at first at St. Mary's, you know, and she, you know, she, it's kind of similar to St. Teresa of Avila too. You know, she's already a nun. She's already given her life to God. And yet there's this call within this call of a deeper, complete, total giving, and that unknown. I was just reading, Father Donald Haggerty wrote a book on conversion. He speaks of this, this call to, you know, there's someone already living their life virtuously, but this call for this total, complete surrender and almost this leap of faith and giving, holding nothing back. That was so Mother Teresa. You know, she didn't wait till she had everything in order. She just started teaching the kids with the, you know, the stumps of, you know, no pencils, just in the mud, and just started where she saw the need and trusted that everything else would come if she had first things first and had her, you know, if it all came from that love of God.
Gabe, did I hear you say that Mother Teresa has played a role in the hearts of the men in your men's group?
Oh, yes, totally. I mean, because Todd, the guy who runs our men's group, right, legend, he's a former fighter pilot. So he was an FAP, Top Gun pilot. You know, he's this super alpha kind of archetype. But then I think quite early in his career or something, he came across A Simple Path. I think he read Mother Teresa's book, A Simple Path. And he wrote to Mother Teresa. This is when she was still alive. I guess he wrote just to the, you know, the missionaries of charity. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, he got a letter back from Mother Teresa. And Todd tells this story amazingly. You know, he said, well, thank you for your letter and thank you for the glowing compliments and stuff. But, you know, why don't you come and just do something about it then? Why don't you put your money where your mouth is? You know, why don't you come and help us out in a way, basically? So then Todd went there and I think, you know, met her and was praying with her. And, you know, he has this kind of very, very almost providential seeming bond with her. And so when I joined the men's group by accident in January to do Exodus 90, he was actually the reason I did Exodus 90, because I was on a Zoom call like this, just really randomly. And he shared what Exodus 90 was for him. And then so I was sold then. And then through the journey of Exodus 90, learned about, you know, his connection to the missionaries of charity. And I'm probably going to be heading there in February myself. And I really can't wait. And, you know, Father Lou from St. Raphael's was just there a few weeks ago. You know, they got off a whatever 25-hour flight. And he was literally wrestled into the pulpit and said mass half asleep, and said mass every day and was hearing confessions of all the sisters all week. And you just think, you know, there's something kind of amazing about that, you know, and I, as someone who works on the very sort of materialistic end of charity fundraising. This last year for me has been a huge come to Jesus experience, because I've realized through Todd's mentorship and ultimately Mother Teresa and ultimately Our Lady and ultimately our Lord, you know, that really it's not about just raising tons of money from wherever you can get it, but it's really just about, again, bringing it down back to earth with one-on-one communion with Christ through the poorest of the poor.
That's a beautiful testimony. And I look forward to hearing the report of your trip there in February. That's going to be amazing.
You know, I'm going to join in a little bit. You know, Gina, one of the things that we mentioned that we're recording this during Advent, but it can be obviously reflected on at any time. Just Our Lady. You guys have brought up Our Lady a lot, Gabe, Brian. The thing that I, you know, that really stuck out to me in reading your book was how two of the saints had lost their mothers at an early stage by death. Edith Stein had a slightly different death of her mother, not one where, you know, she had to experience her actual death until later, but that her mother rejected her because of her choice. So it was like a death where her mother was removed. And now we have, you know, Teresa of Calcutta, that on page 75, and when I read your words that she never saw her again, like I stopped in that reading and, you know, whether I knew it or not, or maybe saw it in a movie. And I think this is the beautiful thing of this book and this journey of the simple way that you've organized some of these words. Like it almost can become a type of meditative prayer, in the sense that if the Lord is speaking to you to stop, you read a line, stop, it contemplate what it must be like to not have your mother, whether it's physically through death or they've rejected you or you never see them again. And this is a powerful time of year, especially in Advent, to really soak in the readings of Advent. But the Blessed Mother is weaved all through our liturgical year to really reflect on that.
That's a beautiful insight, Mary Beth, and how Mary became the mother for these four women in a very particular way. Yeah, I remember in one of the documentaries about Mother Teresa, just kind of hearing the story about how, gosh, was this, I think this is the one that just came up from the Knights of Columbus recently, because I hadn't been tuned into this, that she had tried to get home to visit her family and was unable to because of communist restrictions or whatever. And so just think about the grief that she carried in her heart of not being able to ever see her mother again. But turning to Our Lady as that, the surrogate mother who's really, really the superior mother, right? The better mother in so many ways that can satisfy that longing that we all have for perfect mothering and for companionship, for perpetual help and so forth. Certainly during the season of Advent, thinking of Our Lady, as her motherhood was being born itself, and growing through the course of her life from the joys of infancy and the trials of their exile into Egypt, and then into the sorrows that she endured at the foot of the cross, just the maturity in her own motherhood. I just think about that. You know, we kind of think of Mary as being like this perfect creation from the beginning, which she was, of course, because of her Immaculate Conception, but she also grew and developed and matured. And you can see how her journeying alongside Jesus brought her into a deeper reality of her own holiness. And, you know, we're all on a journey of some degree to that extent. And Christmas is certainly a good time to think about entering more deeply into that personal journey that we're all embarking upon.
Well, I just thought, Mary Beth, that's so, like, you mentioned like that abandon that of all these women with their mothers. That's something probably so foreign today. You know, I don't know about y'all, but with like, my mom's in my pocket all the time with my phone, you know, and, you know, no matter how many times I try and cut the cord, right? I love my mother, but and like, you know, with even with the advances in healthcare, you know, people are living so much longer and better. And so that sense of detachment, right, that possessions of people in our life, like really holding on to our relationship, not letting people be free to go do with it. You know, my parents are divorced, and I'll never forget. I was a bit of a smart aleck. I was visiting my father one weekend and I didn't tell my mom about it. And she's like, you know, Ryan, where are you? And you're not answering your call. And then I send a snarky text back. I'm like, woman, don't you know I'd be in my father's house? It was not the smart thing. Don't imitate Christ that way. But I just think that, you know, nurturing that abandonment for your, as a, I'm a, you know, there's a lot of moms on this call. to letting your kids be free to explore their vocation and to be detached and to let them go, I'd imagine is quite difficult to do in today's climate.
Yeah, when you listen to saint stories and, you know, the family opposing vocations and things, now from the other side as a mother, I'm like, oh, that is really hard. You know, that would be hard to imagine never seeing your child again. But I was thinking about still how important Mother Teresa's own mother was for her. And those you see those seeds in those early stories, like how the mother would bustle about getting ready for the father to come home, and she would always smile at him, you know, no matter what the day was like. And you see that reflected later in Mother Teresa's, you know, just smile at someone, you know, or that even back then, her mother wouldn't refuse a beggar who came to the door. And you know, those seeds that she planted that later came to fruition in Mother Teresa's own vocation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This chapter was so jam-packed. Like, you can't breeze through it without that call within a call and really what that means. So if you're out there and thinking that you've heard the Lord or don't even know if you've heard the Lord, like, he's got a special unrepeatable mission for each one of us, Gina. And I think that you bring that out when you go through her life in your writing. The other thing I wanted to see, if you guys picked up that she started with 12, isn't that an interesting number? That, you know, these women that imitated her. So there were relationships that she fostered. And that's how this whole order started, with 12 that watched her authentic witness. And then they wanted to copy it. And isn't that interesting in today's culture, how we want to imitate maybe things that social media is presenting, but yet we have the true imitation of Christ. I don't know, Gabe, does that like strike any chord with you?
Well, you know, you trigger me anytime with the word imitation, because that's how I got back into Christ, was through the writings of René Girard, whose thesis is based on essentially bridging the gap from secular materialism into you know, the faith, by speaking the language that we secular materialists that make up a lot of culture today tend to speak, you know, which is the language of, yeah, the carnal and that's very interesting. Back to Gina's point about this is really the first, you know, kind of saint of the media, where we actually have access to footage of Mother. And, you know, I love the YouTube video of her on Irish TV. I think it was in the 70s. Amazing interview, this lovely Irish interview, and it's just brilliant. You see her body language, you see the way that she just, I don't know, it's just like there's an ethereal quality. And then also when she's on Firing Line with William Buckley, which is like just massive culture clash, right? But again, she just handles it so supremely and so serenely. And you can just learn so much by watching these YouTube videos. And I feel that there's some grace in that. I feel that some consolation in that we get, you know, that we've been given, that we have access to this saint that we can actually go and watch and behold. Instead of just having to make do, nothing wrong with that, with an icon, but you know, I think, and that, what does that mean for imitation in this day and age? Well, back to René Girard, you know, the idea is ultimately that everything is geared towards imitating the Father and through Christ and then through the saints, and this sort of chain of command of imitation. And, you know, it's not as fun, obviously, imitating Mother Teresa as it may be for imitating, you know, whoever it might be on TikTok, but that's the free will that we have. The free will that we have is who to imitate, who to emulate. And then that becomes our project in a more carnal sense.
This conversation has been mesmerizing, and I have a feeling if I don't cut you off now, we could probably go for hours. We have plenty to read and plenty of discussion time coming up for tomorrow. We will start tomorrow on page 82, reading about Saint Teresa of Calcutta, and we're going to study her lessons.